Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the studios of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed, your host. Today you'll hear part one of a two-part series on reforming the Federal Communications Commission. Media freedoms and innovations in America are often modeled by other countries, so the reforms have an international aspect. In a groundbreaking report, the FCC acknowledges that some of its policies and regulations are out of sync with the swiftly evolving media markets and the information needs of communities. That's essential for a vibrant democracy. The report notes that newsrooms are scaling back coverage of state and local government, and the watchdog function is losing teeth. It says consolidation has hurt local news production, and transparency in both government and the media needs to be improved. RJI and the Journalism School recently co-sponsored a symposium on how the FCC reforms could shape the local media landscape. Barbara Cochran, a former president of the Radio Television Digital News Association, opened the symposium by describing the aims of Steve Waldman's FCC report.
The report is focused on describing the media landscape today and analyzing government policies that help or hinder the flow of information. And these questions are taken from the report itself. There were two basic goals. One was to answer the question about whether the public is being well served, and second, to explore, as a government agency, as the Federal Communications Commission is, to explore whether policies are in sync with what the public needs today. The report found that there is a lot to cheer about, but there are also very troubling questions, especially with regard to how local communities are getting information. The report says breathtaking media abundance lives side by side with serious shortages in reporting. And as you see in the fine print here, the news and information the principal findings say that the news and information landscape is more vibrant than ever, with more voices coming into being every day. That digital technology has been a tremendous catalyst for innovation and also for allowing the public to get into the game and to provide a free exchange of ideas and information for citizens who don't necessarily own a printing press or a broadcast tower to make their voices heard. For all that we're hearing about problems, and especially at the local level, local television stations and newspapers still play a vital role and are the largest providers of local news online. There are partnerships galore among members of nonprofit media, but also between commercial and nonprofit media who are collaborating more than ever, and the nonprofit sector is becoming more varied than ever. Not just public broadcasting, but many others are now entering that arena. And yet, amid media abundance, there is a shortage of local professional accountability reporting.
Now, this report goes on to say that communities benefit tremendously from many innovations brought by the Internet and simultaneously suffer from the dislocations caused by the seismic changes in media markets. During a showcase of media innovations at the symposium, Sarah Hill presented a new interactive show she hosts on KOMU, a television station and broadcast lab of the Missouri School of Journalism.
Welcome to all of you. This essentially is our cyber couch, and every day during the news, We anchor our newscast with a live CyberCouch with people from all around the world. Some of these people, some are local as well, and we allow many different voices into our news conversation from all around the world. If you look at Robert's screen right here, I don't know if you're able to see it. Again, I apologize, this it's not popping up. But he's on the streets of Vienna, Austria. And he is on his mobile device. He's on an iPad 2. Is that correct, Robert?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so this is a new technology that we use during a newscast and that we're really geeked out about because it allows viewers to have group conversations about the day's news. And not only conversations in person via a camera, but conversations out on the street, for instance, a breaking news event. If there were to be a fire or an accident on a bridge somewhere, we can open a hangout and say, you know what, instead of us scrambling up a live truck and going out to the area and to get the information, you all can come to us. We'll open a hangout. You can join our hangout and have a group conversation about what you're seeing, either from your iPhone or your Android device, because it's mobile-enabled. Google Plus Hangout is mobile-enabled now, or from your iPad, too. So that is one way that this technology here is transforming our newscasts. We use it in a variety of ways. It is essentially Google Plus Hangout is a free satellite truck attached to a crowdsourcing tool. Okay, what makes this better than Skype? Well, number one, you can pipe in 10 different people from around the world. You can do that with Skype, but the technology isn't as reliable. But what makes this unique is it is attached to a crowdsourcing tool, a social networking device, that you have ability to find these different sources around the world. We use this technology in the aftermath of the Oslo bombings, and we're able to bring people into our conversation to get their sentiments about what they were experiencing, which is essentially was their 9/11. We recently talked with individuals about the Turkey earthquake, Penn State riots. We had someone recently to talk about the Penn State riots. So this essentially is our satellite truck that we're using. And on most days, I think it's because all these cords are hooked into it, but it is really instantaneous. It has telepresence technology so that when one person talks, they automatically go up into the large portion of the screen. They're automatically displayed. That's not switched by a director at all. They're just automatically propelled up there. So that is a neat feature of that event. Let's start with Robert. Hey, Robert, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, can you tell this group what that has been like for you to contribute to a conversation of a local news organization in Columbia, Missouri?
Yes, I did not expect this to be possible. So in Europe, in Austria especially, this would be unthinkable. And I was very happy to be able to join the news desk, and now even the news show. So Austria and other stations here are maybe 2 years behind. They are starting to build their Facebook profiles and Twitter profiles and bring in some messages in advance to get messages and questions into the show. But they are never doing it live. It's unique worldwide.
Gotcha. I don't know if you guys were able to hear him or not. I apologize for the quality of the audio. But let's ask, I think the mobiles is giving our hangout problems today might be the live stream that's on it. Matthew, if you can answer that question, what's that been like for you to contribute to a news conversation?
Well, it really is quite awesome because, as Robert just mentioned, over here, the news corporations aren't very quick on the uptake, whereas what Sarah's doing is really bringing people in from Google Plus onto the Hangout platform to be a part of her show. So I'm able to get my messages from Africa to people in the United States who wouldn't usually hear my stories, and that adds another dimension to Sarah's news broadcasts.
him. We hang out with our viewers every day at 2:30, open up a hangout with no agenda and have them come in and tell us what they think is news.
The show starts at 4, so this is before the show that starts.
And we communicate with the people on our cyber couch via Google Docs and let them know what we're going to talk about, and then they add in that Google Doc what they want to talk about. So that is just one way. I'm going to turn it over to Stacy here to show a little bit more about the show when the technology looks a heck of a lot better than it does.
You see some of it right there. I will talk a little more about the show. I'll say one thing, and you got a sense of it there. Everybody that Sarah connects with, and she is our main point of contact. We have a producer on the show who's involved in some of this and some student help, but Sarah's the main point of contact, and she's very much on a first-name basis with all of these sources, local and internationally. And they have a online cyber friendship here that's developed, and it's an access to the talent that I don't think viewers on commercial television have seen before. And she's got her hangout going when she's anchoring, so she can talk during commercials and have that relationship. Jeffrey, if you could roll the video of the and just keep the audio down. I'll just talk over it. But we'll show you the show a little bit, and I'll talk about where it is and when it is. We, like many stations, had to deal with the loss of the Oprah Winfrey Show and what we would put into that spot. And so we were airing Oprah at 4 o'clock. This is the show here rolling behind us, so you can see that. We had an opening at 4 o'clock, and we discussed what we might put into that spot. And we knew that local news was better for our brand. Marty Siddall, our general manager, is here, and a number of other people at the station were involved in this, and we wanted to extend the local news brand, its value that local stations have, rather than bring in another syndicated program. We decided fairly early on that we could fill an hour with the show and set out to put that together. We knew we'd like to keep some of that Oprah audience, but knew there were other talk options. We're up against Ellen, and so we know a lot of people would go there. And the other hope, and maybe a little bit of a dream, was that we could grab people who weren't watching local news otherwise, because we could engage them and make them feel like they're a part of the show. And what you saw Sarah demonstrate is a little bit of that. Go ahead and let that roll, Jeffrey, and they can kind of see that in the background here. This is the open of the show right here. The show is a half hour, or is an hour. We have a producer. We hired a producer to produce the show, Nathan Higgins, who's also watching on the stream right now. That's really our two full-time people who devote time to the show. One of our pushes here, one of the things I've really focused on, is can we build a model that other stations could duplicate? Because we could throw 200 students at the show and have enough person power really to overwhelm any problem we would have, but that's not a realistic model for other programs. So as you watch here, you can see that we're using social media comments that are brought up in a box here. Those are put in same day, close to real time. We're working on some technology in real time. This is who you couldn't see on the street.
Live from the interactive studios of KONUA, this is U News at 4 with Sarah Hill.
It is Thursday, November 10th. It is the day before Veterans Day. Welcome, U Newsies, and happy 236th birthday to the United States Marine Corps. Ahead on today's show, a possible resolution to a battle brewing between Ameren and the Lake of the Ozarks.
Sarah really does use every device in front of her there during the show. That is not for show. She can talk about that.
With our live cyber counts, we have a packed count today.
You get a sense that we are bringing in.
Go ahead and pause it, Jeffrey.
More input from our viewers. I mean, for example, Sarah's flooded mailbox.
Oh, absolutely. I think Sarah could probably give you the hard numbers on that. But because we're inviting people, we've invited people for a long time to email us. Television stations do that. Email us with your story ideas. Email us with your complaints if you must. But email us and get in touch with us. And we've had a recorded phone line where people could record comments for some time. But now we are reaching out and letting them reach back in real time to do that. So not only is there that real-time interaction that Sarah has via a hangout and social media and live chats and the other things that we have going on, but now people feel that it's okay to make other contact.
It's face-to-face viewer engagement unlike any other. I mean, this is the world's first face-to-face social network, essentially. So when you engage people face-to-face, they engage even more like that right back. We have 80,000 people following us on Google Plus right now. I get about 100 friend requests on Facebook probably a week. I have probably 600 unread emails in my inbox right now. So, I mean, the level of viewer engagement is up. And as we all know, that our days of one-to-many communication is numbered, right? Those days are numbered. So we are connecting with these people horizontally on all of their different platforms, knowing that they will share our content on their Twitter, their Google Plus account, their Facebook account, their Tumblr, because these viewers are worth three of the old viewers who didn't have those platforms to isolated. Share on.
We're also sharing their content. We encourage people, and the show has a very community-focused approach here, and so we encourage people to make videos to send in to promote their own events. And so we've had some that have been very nice. I didn't bring an example today where people have put some work into talking about an upcoming charity event or whatever it might be, and we encourage them to do that. And if we... if they aren't able to do that, some people aren't comfortable with trying to put themselves on camera. If they'll send the information, we're using Extra Normal. If you're familiar with Extra Normal, it's the thing that makes the little cartoons. You type in the script, and it makes cartoons of it, and there's some humorous ones going around. We have the Extra Normal superhero that will, a cartoon that we type in their information, and it will publicize it for them. So we have video with that rather than just a graphic with words up there. So it gives people a chance to put their content on the air. We still moderate it. We still filter it. Every social media comment that went up there was picked and approved by a moderator to go on. So it keeps the undesirable material off of the air. But we try to keep it as unfiltered as possible. We don't correct their spelling mistakes.
Hill's show, as it was described by news director Stacey Wolfel in that segment, is just one example of innovations that broadcast stations, TV stations, and radio, and newspapers are experimenting with. Before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to today's program on our website. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. Interactive productions at television stations require greater bandwidth. One issue the FCC is dealing with is the looming shortage of bandwidth because of the explosive growth in smartphones. A recent article in The Economist points out that America needs to make 300 megahertz of additional spectrum available by 2014 to avoid a crunch that drives up consumers' mobile phone bills and holds back innovation. FCC says auctions could release up to 120 megahertz of TV broadcast spectrum. But during the symposium, Don Hicks, the president of the Missouri Broadcasters Association, said the auctions could also hinder innovations at stations that lose bandwidth, like the innovations like the one we saw at KOMU.
Kind of speaking to Barbara's opinion piece and editorial, which I happen to agree with totally, in the Wall Street Journal. And this is the type of stuff that's at stake if they force television broadcasters into repacking schemes and things like that that cause us to give up part of our spectrum. All this innovation, all these new things that you're seeing right here, and things that are just a twinkle in someone's eye right now will be lost. And what we will have, instead of free access, is we'll have a toll booth on what we used to call the information superhighway. And that's what's at stake. So in all the things that we talk about today, we also need to understand that there is a legislative and regulatory prerogative that we have to, that people like me, that's what I do, guard against and fight against so that we can clear this path so that people like you, when it time comes for you, you can be innovative and you can be doing these things and serving your communities to a greater extent.
Now, local radio is having even greater problems coping with the changing media landscape. Since the mid-1970s, Bob Priddy has served as director of the Radio News Network, MissouriNet. Speaking at a panel during the FCC symposium, he reflected on the changes he's seen in local radio news coverage, and he criticized its current state.
I work for the MissouriNet, which is a statewide commercial radio network. We do news, sports, and other programs for about 60 radio stations throughout the state. And every day I work with 60 radio stations in one form or another, all the way from major markets like Kansas City all the way down to the little tea kettle stations buried deep in the Ozarks. I've been at this a long time, and I've developed kind of a curmudgeonly attitude about where we are in radio news these days. I'm a frustrated believer in the possibilities that radio has to serve the communities that they're in, radio stations. But at the same time, I see radio as a resource that is too much just basically wasting itself in terms of service to the public. Every day I talk to these stations. Every now and then I have a vacancy on my news staff, and I start looking around to find somebody to take a person's place. And I find that over the years, the minor leagues have dried up. The people who are doing news or what passes for news on too many local radio stations aren't qualified to work in my newsroom. And it's getting harder and harder for me to find somebody, which is why last spring I hired a fresh graduate from the University of Missouri. And she's just terrific. A lot of you probably aren't thinking of radio, but I wish you would. In the right places, in the right markets, radio is doing some really outstanding things. But I want to be the curmudgeon today that talks about places where the wheels have fallen off, and there's too many of those. Steve's report on and I wrote down some notes here, and I hope you'll let me work off them a little bit. I think Steve's report on radio information needs in the communities doesn't go deep enough. He talks about major markets, medium-sized markets. There's one mention of a station in Mitchell, South Dakota, and the news director there is a friend of mine. If you're ever in Mitchell, stop by the Corn Palace. It's an interesting place. Another friend of mine in Akron, Ohio, is one of the best friends I have in RTDNA, and he's quoted in the report. But it doesn't get much below that, and it's in markets that are smaller than that. It's in markets like Columbia, Jefferson City, Fulton, Concordia, Kansas, Mattoon, Illinois. Markets like this where you really have to have some concerns about what's happening to local radio. It doesn't even touch places like Kansas City, where one of the legacy news stations in Kansas City has no news people on its staff. It contracts for one person. One person comes in and does their morning news. He has been told if he leaves the station in a station vehicle to cover a story and has an accident, the station insurance will not cover him. That's where they are at this station in Kansas City. And this market, Columbia, Jefferson City, Fulton, for example, the only radio stations that are locally owned are KBIA and KJLU, Lincoln University Station in Jefferson City, and the University Station here. KBIA is doing some really remarkable stuff. I listen to KBIA a lot, which says I don't listen much to the commercial stations in my own market, even my own affiliates. That says something right there, I think. For 7 years, I was the news director of a station in Jefferson City, KLIK. KLIK's operations now are moved to Columbia. They have a small studio in Jefferson City, but that's it. For four stations that are in one building here, KLIK and KFRU and two other stations, there's one news person. One news person, four stations. I asked him the other day what he does. He says he does newscasts throughout the day on two stations and provides news for announcers on the other two stations, including the station that supposedly is a Jefferson City radio station. That's not a way that you serve a local market. That's not a way you serve a local community. I have said to some of my friends from time to time that the best thing to happen to local newspapers is local radio these days, if local newspapers will simply take advantage of the lack of responsibility that local radio is showing to the communities where they work. The situation is even worse in smaller communities that aren't served by a regular newspaper. They're not served by, they're not really being served by anybody. Supposedly the internet is a great source of information, but if you look at the internet sites of many radio stations, you're not going to find anything of value to the community. You might find some ads. You might find the latest copy from the AP or from CNN or from the Kansas City Star, or the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or the Missouri Net. But will you find anything that indicates anybody at that radio station has gone out and covered anything local? No, I'm afraid you will not. Nobody is getting the news. Nobody is presenting the news in those markets. It's a sad affair for local radio. One of my former reporters used to work for Clear Channel with its famous hub and spoke concept. He had no hesitation in talking about how the hub and spoke version of Clear Channel Radio is playing games with news. And basically, I agree. The FCC report, Steve's report, quotes Clear Channel's CEO as proclaiming, "Instead of having news gatherers and anchors in every market, we have news gatherers and anchors in some markets. It's a way for us to make sure we have the highest quality presentation of the news." That's a telling phrase presentation, not substance. Presentation, not content. Presentation, not coverage of the news. The study quotes a Pew Research Center saying, "It is clear that fewer people are relying on radio for their news. The number of people who said they listened to news on radio dropped from 54% to 34% from 1991 to 2010. Well, duh. If you're not providing me with anything that is of use to me, I'm sure not going to listen to you. I'm going to find something else if I listen at all. Why should I? I was on the RTDNA board of directors when deregulation came in. And we supported deregulation. We believe that not every radio station has to do news all the time, but we did believe that every community would have a station that did do news, was responsible. Boy, is that a disappointment. Last May, there was a devastating tornado that hit Joplin. One of our affiliates in Joplin, KZRG, was on the air as that tornado was coming right toward them. They figured they were going to get hit by a flying car. There was no basement for that radio station, and this mile-wide tornado was headed down their street. They stayed on the air, and fortunately the tornado veered slightly to the north and missed them by four blocks. For the next 6 weeks, the five radio stations in that building simulcast. They dropped all of their programming. All of their people were focused on providing a service to that town, helping friends locate friends, helping report what the damage was, helping report the initial tragedy and the slow recovery. It was radio the way radio is supposed to be. I wrote a blog about it. And one of the things I noted in that blog was, all of us know what too much radio is today. Commitments to community are much too often limited. Commitments to debt service and profit margins are too primary. Radio lost too much of its soul when communities were turned into markets, when stations became properties, and when news reporters became morning personalities, if they existed at all in the station. And I went on and on at length about that. I don't know what the solution is to today's problems. I do hope that there is one, and I hope that it comes out of perhaps young people like you who get into the industry with some ideals and some knowledge of the possibilities that radio and television have to a community. And as you become more and more involved in this industry, you'll make yourselves felt, and you'll change the paradigms. You'll change the way things are happening by your mere presence, by your intellect, by your curiosity, and by your talents and your skills. God knows we need it, because too much of radio is letting too many people go ignorant. Thousands of our communities now are more ignorant than they were before deregulation came into effect. Thousands of them. And ignorance, I am afraid to tell you, is a favorite tool of the demagogue and the despot, and it's a great enemy of a republic that believes that an intelligent people will make intelligent decisions. I'm not sure that radio is doing its part to uphold that part of our national belief. I hope that it can be. I still maintain hope that radio can be not what it used to be, but it can be something better. And frankly, I hope that the future, well, I'm putting the future of radio in your hands and people like you, because you understand, after these sessions perhaps, the importance of serving communities, towns, telling people what's happening and the new ways that you can do that. So I have hope in the medium that I have made my life in. I have hope that you can find a way around it. And maybe some kind of re-regulation might have to take place. I hate to think of that. But if an industry is going to abuse the power that it has and the responsibilities it should share, then maybe we do need somebody coming in and saying, you got to do this. Maybe that's where we are. I don't know, but I have hope.
The FCC is now looking into ways to help local news outlets meet the information needs of the local communities. And now we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist. Our director is Travis McMillan, Pat Akers engineered audio, and Raymond Tungekar is our lead producer. Thank you for listening and watching our program. We'll have part two of the FCC reforms next week. I'm David Reed for Global Journalist.